Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
History is being discovered with each passing day as a scientist leads a team of dedicated field and laboratory researchers into the myriads of sounds and sightings collected in the swamps of the Choctahatchee River. Our update with Dr. Jeffrey Hill continues when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News. We now hear Dr. Jeffrey Hill of Auburn University talk about what he and his team are discovering in their historic quest for the legendary ivory-billed woodpecker.
Well, we really have two activities. We're trying to do a systematic survey of every tree in the forest for woodpecker cavities, large woodpecker cavities. So we have divided our 12 square miles into linear transects 50 meters apart, that each have to be walked by a person looking up and looking for holes in trees. And so this is something like over 1,000 transects that have to be walked or paddled or however we can get through them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very labor-intensive work. You have to get down the transect, try to look on each tree, and then if you find a hole that seems 3 inches or larger in diameter, then you have to put a metal tag on the tree, and write, get out a data sheet and write a description of the cavity, score it for how promising it looks, and then move to the next one. So this has taken a lot of our time.
Talk about the importance of the cavities, too,
well,
what you'd be looking for.
These birds sleep in a cavity every night, and then they're obviously going to raise their young in a cavity. So a cavity is one place where we can pin the bird down on a specific location. The cavities of ivory bills should be larger than the cavities of Pileated, the other big cavity driller in the area, and they should have a different shape. They should be more oblong. So that's what we focus on, the big oblong cavities. And when these are found by searchers, we go out and we put a time-lapse camera pointed at the hole in the tree. And these cameras will basically take pictures of that hole over a 5-day period about once every 15 seconds. Maybe we set them for a little shorter than that on cavities. But anyway, periodic pictures where if a bird landed on that tree and went into the hole, we would almost surely get a picture of it.
Now, I question, too, because I'm such fascinating work. I love field work.
Yeah.
Then someone has to look through all that stuff.
That's right. Yeah. And we have a designated camera person, Jamie Hill, who actually worked on the Cornell project last year doing the same thing and worked a lot of bugs out last year. He's our full-time camera setter. And so he sets these cameras and pulls them in and brings up these images on his computer, and you basically run through these still images rapidly, sort of like a movie, and watch for movement. And the human eye will detect the slightest movement in those frames.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we don't miss any birds moving that frame.
I do a lot of video work, and yeah, if you're watching, if you have a fixed camera on a, it's going to appear as a fixed thing with different lighting, but if a bird shows up, you definitely notice that.
You do. I've done some analysis of these myself, and you see everything. You pick up moths flying through. As long as it's a little difference in contrast, and a bird on a tree definitely would be, you don't see, when you're zooming through the images, all you see is something was back there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back and find that image and then realize what it is. But yeah, you wouldn't miss the bird.
In terms of your monitoring these cavities, have you had any successes that you're aware of to date?
Well, we haven't gotten a picture of an ivory bill, or we'd be more excited. We'd be publishing. We have gotten pictures so far of pileated woodpeckers and squirrels and other species of woodpeckers. Now, our camera deployment got off to kind of a slow start. We were getting these cameras and getting organized until just very recently. We've really only had just a few weeks of camera deployment.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
So we're not anywhere near, say, the halfway point of our camera deployments or something. We have got month of work left, so I'm not very discouraged yet about our camera deployment.
Okay,
we've got a lot of big holes in trees to point cameras at still.
Another aspect of your quest, and we'll be following the camera work as we proceed here. You give me a call as soon as you find something out.
Yeah.
This has to do with what they call the double knock, and that is, as you've said, not definitive, but it's indicative that maybe an ivory-billed woodpecker, because they do have a distinctive double knock. But
that's right.
In the wild,
instead of drumming like most woodpeckers, the birds in this genus, Campophilus, give a two rapid bangs, powerful bangs on a tree, boom boom,
mm-hmm.
and there's no other woodpecker or animal that will give two loud double raps.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, there's other sources for two bangs in the forest.
Well, what's
the problem?
How's your work proceeding in terms of the double knocks?
Oh, it's really good. We mostly try to record these using what we call listening stations, these remote recorders. And this part of the project's being run by my colleague, Dr. Dan Mennell at the University of Windsor. He and his grad students have set, I believe it's 14 of these listening stations through the forest. They retrieve sound cards every day from these things and then analyze them for putative double knocks and putative Kent calls, the other sound that ivory bills make. It started off slow. The beginning of the year we didn't get much, but lately we've been getting pretty regular double knock and Kent call detections on these listening stations.
Now, again, does a person have to then scan through like a wave file or something of that nature?
Well,
to...
it turns out humans are way better at analyzing visual images than auditory recording.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't sit and listen to these sounds.
Oh, right.
That would be too time-consuming. What Dan does is he digitizes the sounds and converts them to sonograms.
Sonograms, yeah.
These pictures of the sounds.
Right.
And then the students sit and, almost like looking at the Reconyx camera images, they zoom through these recorded sounds visually, looking for double knocks will be two distinct sound, vertical sound images on these sonographs. And Kent calls are stacked harmonics, a little stack of notes.
Mm-hmm.
And each sound is pretty distinctive visually. And they can zoom through pretty fast and look for these double knocks and Kent calls.
Describe the Kent call as well.
The Kent, this is another big difference with pileated woodpecker. Pileated woodpecker do this kind of maniacal laugh, loud, striking sound, whereas ivory bill, the more striking bird, has this really boring little nasal sound they give. I can't do it very well, but it's sort of like a eh kind of sound. I didn't do that very well, but it's a nasally, simple little note that they give.
Hmm.
And the best description was one, I believe it was first given by James Tanner, who studied these birds 60 years ago. He said it sounds like a tin trumpet.
Hmm.
Kids used to have little toy trumpets, or if you take the mouthpiece out of some wind instruments like a saxophone, you can create a noise like these. But it's a very simple, non-musical, really kind of boring little sound that these birds make.
You're assembling recordings of double knocks and as well what people assume to be Kent calls.
Last year we had about 100 double knocks and 100 putative Kent calls recorded, and this year I don't know what we're up to, but we're slowly building this year again towards those kind of numbers.
Well, of course, but then people are always going to be able to question you about that.
Oh yeah, we do too.
I mean,
you hear these things and they sound good and they match. There's very few recordings made, Kent calls made of a known ivory bill where the recordist had the bird in front of them. These are from 60 years ago.
Mm.
There are no recordings of double knocks from this species.
Mm.
So we try to analyze it thinking, what else could it be? How well does it match the descriptions and recordings of these things? But it's always supposition. We never know for sure that an ivory bill made these sounds because we have never seen a bird open its mouth and make them yet.
Well, now let's talk about the sightings. What's the status of the sightings at this point? And, of course, what you're ultimately leading up to is getting a definitive either video or photograph.
Yeah.
But let's talk about sightings from your crew out there.
Well, we had a few really good sightings right between Christmas Eve and around New Year's. And the best sighting was by Tyler Hicks, who was one of the guys that actually discovered these birds with me in 2005. Tyler's an outstanding bird watcher. He's now an undergraduate student in Colorado. So he was back over the entire Christmas break trying to get a picture of these birds. he had an ivory bill perched on a tree right in front of him. So he was approaching Kent Coles. This is on Christmas Eve, and kind of a drizzly situation. Came around a bend in the stream and had a female ivory bill perched, he estimated, 40 feet away. So that's very close. He could see details on this bird. It had a black crest, which is diagnostic of ivory bills. Pileated, both male and female, have a red crest. Only a female pileated of the North American crested woodpeckers would have a black crest. He could see the white on the lower part of the back. He could see the ivory-colored bill against the tupelo trunk. And he could see the stripes, these dorsal stripes, running down the bird's back. He had a camera in his hand, a good Canon digital SLR, but it was under his coat because it was drizzly. He pulled that camera out and attempted to photograph the bird, but of course, the bird only stayed on the tree for a beat. Then it's flying, and he's trying to snap the camera towards this moving bird, and he didn't get it.
The one that got away.
Yep, it was darn close. It was very frustrating. Mm. That bird had perched on the tree for another beat. Probably the problem was he came up on it too close. I mean, 40 feet away, he was right on top of that bird. If he had come around the bend and had been 100 feet away or 200 feet away, maybe it would have sat for a second and he would have gotten pictures. But it was right in front of him.
Everyone's going to wonder if he should be hooked up to a lie detector or something like that, because he has a vested interest in seeing this. So you're going to have to keep looking and try to get that shot. Well, that sounds very exciting, and it's too bad, unfortunately, that he wasn't able to get that shot. But you're going to continue. Talk about some other sightings. Apparently, you are getting sightings.
Yeah, a few. We had a flurry of sightings. A volunteer came in and actually had saw birds in two different locations on two different days. This was all about the same time, and we also, between New Year, Christmas Eve and just after New Year's, we also had a lot of double knock detections and Kent call detections, but people hearing these. We didn't have our listening station set up at that time yet. And we thought, this is it, because this is right at the very beginning of our study. The first time we ever had decent numbers of people in the forest, and we thought, well, this is going to be easy. All of a sudden, we got people, and we got birds, and then it went just completely dead. After about January 5th, we went through a 3 or 4 week period where we barely had a single sound detection, no sightings, and it was very depressing. We haven't had a really good sighting lately, but our sound detections are picking up. Both human observers are hearing these birds, hearing putative Kents and double knocks, and the listening stations are starting to regularly detect double knocks and putative Kent calls.
That's why I opened this up, talking about the fact that spring is in the air, because that's when anyone who knows about birds, that's when things really start to happen in all respects, in terms of territorial displays and calls, and mating and things. Are you noticing numerically an increase in your observations?
Yeah, since say even into the first week of February, it was pretty slow. But in the last week or 10 days, things have picked up quite a bit. Like I said, searchers are hearing what they think sound like Kents and double knocks, and the listening stations are recording Kents and double knocks.
If it's going to happen, it's probably going to happen about this in this next months ahead here.
In terms of getting a picture, it could happen anytime, any day of the year. But it could be actually be the hardest while the birds are nesting, unless we actually find the nest, which we hope we do. Then it'll be easy. You know, one bird will be in the nest incubating, and it maybe will restrict the bird's movement. I don't know. Nesting could actually slow us down to some degree. I think the time when we're most likely to get a picture is if these birds fledge young. When they have newly fledged young in the forest, that's when they should be most vulnerable to being approached.
Right. There's a learning curve.
Yeah, well, you know, parents get pulled into awkward situations by their kids all the time, and the kids are always doing stupid things. So it should be that situation. Very naive birds the parents are trying to watch out for. It should make the parents vulnerable to being approached, and the naive bird should be the most vulnerable to being approached.
One can only hope that they have some sort of protective behavior such that if you enter an area where the young are out, they're going to want to come over and divert you or something like that. Wouldn't that be true?
I think it would definitely do that. I don't think the young will leave the nest until they fly very well, so it won't be like helpless young on the ground. It'll be a group of ivory bills moving, but the young should make mistakes. Let the observers get too close, maybe fly towards the observers out of curiosity, parents are going to need to direct them away, and hopefully these kind of situations will give us photo opportunities.
Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, it's a dream that's never going to happen, that there'll be a basically helpless baby ivory bill on the ground, and the parents are coming in trying to protect it, and we're getting all sorts of pictures. When these birds leave the nest, they can fly very well, but they won't have experience, and they will make mistakes.
Well, I've seen the way parental birds are very, very protective about their
brood. Oh, yeah. You know. We expect that from ivory bills.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like some interesting time ahead here. I know that you've, in the past, been posting a lot of this information on your website. Why don't you tell people where they can go to learn about this, and also what are your plans for sharing this information, which you've done a nice, the newest information. When can we see some of those results?
If we get a definitive photograph, we're not going to be able to announce it immediately, because this will be a big event in the conservation of this bird, and such a picture would have to go through careful scrutiny by experts and then go through peer review into a journal before it would be announced.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what's going on in our daily search, I do post updates about every week or every 2 weeks on our website, and that is www.auburn.edu/ivory bill, all one word, ivory bill.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an updates link in there, and you can see the past updates. And about every week or so, I post a new statement of what we've been seeing and hearing.
I took a look, and it was very interesting to see how things are beginning to increase about this time of the year in terms of the sightings and the double knocks and Kent calls and things.
And there's a link on my page to Dan Mantle's webpage. Dan just posted some sound clips that were recorded on a video camera by one of our volunteer searchers, and I think it's a really interesting series of potential Kent calls.
Oh, that's
so
great.
The listeners can go to Dan's page and listen. That was just posted a few days ago.
Oh, I missed that one. Okay, that's great. Well, let's say that there are ivory billed out there and you finally get the definitive pictures and the proof.
Yeah.
What happens then?
Well, as I said, we will, if we're confident that we've got a truly definitive picture, there will be no argument from woodpecker experts. We will verify that by showing it to various bird identification and woodpecker experts. Then, when we reach that level of confidence, we'll submit it to a journal, a science journal. So it will go out for peer review. If it passes peer review, it'll get published, and that would be the announcement point.
Mm-hmm. I guess my concern is that birders, wonderful people, but everyone wants to see the bird, and just the public at large would want to see this. How in the world are you going to try to keep the birds from being overloved or?
Well, we won't give away our locations, our exact locations where we're working. This is a very big area, and it can be a very tough area to work in. As a matter of fact, it's pretty dangerous. The river, it doesn't have rocks and rapids. It's on the coastal plain, but it water moves fast. There's lots of trees and logs in the water.
Mm-hmm.
A skilled canoeist or kayaker would have little trouble in this area, but the problem is birders will get themselves in trouble by climbing in a canoe or kayak where they have no skill, getting out on that river and getting themselves in trouble.
If people haven't been on some fast water in a kayak or canoe, they got something to learn, because it takes you.
That's right. And logs are really dangerous. I mean, the water sweeps into a log.
Yep.
It'll turn your boat over in a hurry, and then you're in this very cold, fast-moving water. It's a very dangerous situation. Also, this woods is big. It's 2 miles wide or so in most places, and it's a big 2 miles because it's all swamps and channels and very confusing. We don't mind people coming down to view this amazing swamp wilderness. I suggest 7 areas to search on my website that wouldn't interfere with our search whatsoever.
Okay.
www.auburn.edu/ivory bill. There's a link there that says advice to searchers. We would love it if somebody got a picture of this thing. We're trying hard in our study sites, but I encourage other bird watchers to come in and get that picture for us. It would do us an enormous favor.
Well, that's interesting that you can use people's help.
Yeah, just they come right in on top of us. It's not very helpful, but it's a huge swamp bottomland forest in there, and other searchers are useful.
And what they need to do is have a good camera and be sure that it's working.
Yeah, no more excuses. We got enough excuses for why we didn't get the picture. We need the darn picture.
Well, Dr. Hill, thanks so much for lending your voice here and all your thoughts and your hard work and your spirit on the Wild Side News.
Okay, Sydney, it's nice talking to you.
Yeah. Passion rocks. It's great to be rational, intelligent, and just quirky enough to live life as if it really matters. Our quest for the passionate warriors now takes a turn inward as we head on up near the Canadian border, where a nature writing conference is planned. The passions of the written word, when your voice of the earth continues, following this very important message. Listen.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.